TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Ralph Nader, Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. I recorded this talk on October 18, 2016, just 3 weeks before Election Day. A group of young people handed out Bernie-crat flyers to the audience that had already filled the small City Lights bookstore in San Francisco to capacity an hour before Ralph Nader was expected to arrive. Nader was going to talk about his new book, published by City Lights, under the title Breaking Through Power. From the advance reviews, we knew that he was not going to advocate for any party, blue, red, or green, in spite of his own former affiliation with the Green Party, and not even for Sanders in particular. He was going to lay out a specific plan how to take power ourselves and apply it directly to Congress, without the mediation or intervention of any party. In what many experience as an age of powerlessness of ordinary people, that may seem like a far-flung goal, but you will hear in a moment how simple it actually can be. Nader's own life story and success in standing up to power, be it for car safety, healthier food, clean environment, and for a safer workplace, for more than 5 decades. All that shows that even one person with a small staff and organization can have a lasting influence. And he probably has affected all of our lives in some way. Add to that examples of other individuals who Nader mentions by name, who prevented industrial toxins from poisoning their children or fighting for safe water and air. We have an abundance of examples of breaking through power. In his book and talk, Nader lays out a very concrete plan of how to expand these individual stories into a coherent movement that is specific in its goals, can unite left and right, and takes power on a national scale. Here's Ralph Nader. The first to step up to the microphone was Elaine Katzenberger, editor of City Lights. She introduces Matt Gonzalez, who introduces Nader.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to City Lights. This is a very special night indeed. I believe it's the first time ever that Ralph Nader is here at City Lights Books, and it's certainly the first time that we have published a book by Ralph Nader. So this is a really proud and wonderful evening for us. It's really an honor to be his publisher. Ralph Nader is a hero, obviously. So first up is Matt Gonzalez, who will be introducing Ralph for you. Matt Gonzalez is chief attorney of the San Francisco Public Defender's Office and the former president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And he very valiantly ran for mayor here against a machine and didn't quite make it. That was really very grateful. We should all be grateful for Matt. He's a recipient of numerous awards, including the 2000 Lawyer of the Year Award, In Defense of Animals Guardian Award, and the Bert Corona Award from the California's Mexican American Political Association. Matt continues to do all kinds of work for the city of San Francisco, and all of us are lucky to have him here. Please welcome Matt Gonzalez. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a real delight to be here. I don't think I've seen Ralph Nader since 2008. And of course, 2016, we would be just at the end of our second term in office. I like to think our Attorney General, Jello Biafra, would be filing lawsuits against Donald Trump. Interior Secretary Winona LaDuke would be shutting down the Dakota Access Pipeline. Secretary of State Cornel West would be with our UN Ambassador Julian Assange in in Syria. But, you know, I'm kidding, but there is something to be said about what could be, you know. And I think that this book that Ralph has written is really about citizens taking back the power that they truly have. And I don't know if you want to, you know, refer to it as capitalism or neoliberalism or whatever you want to call it, but the system in place, you know, allows people to be satisfied with the table scraps, you know, the breadcrumbs. And this book is really about trying to ignite something with people. It says, hey, the kitchen's over there, the cupboard's full of food, you know, do something about it. I remember being with Ralph in Ohio, and a journalist asked me, what are the two of you doing to get into the debates? And I said, well, what are you doing to get us in the debates? You know, and I think it just goes to the core of what this is all about. Ralph was born in Connecticut in early 1934. Unsafe at Any Speed was published the year I was born. I'm 51, give you an idea. His long-term activism in pushing forward legislation, you know, whether it's the Freedom of Information Act, Clean Water, automotive safety, all kinds of things. He really is, as Elaine said, a legend, and I'm delighted to see him again, and this is really a very fine book, and I'm glad you're all here. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Matt. Yeah, it was a very frustrating campaign. Not 20% of the people knew we were running. It's a total blackout. You know, I think we got 4 minutes on the national news in 10 weeks. And it was all devoted to how do you feel spoiling the Democrats. So we're dealing with a tyranny, a two-party tyranny, that excludes competition in all kinds of legal and illegal ways. Legal because they control the state legislature and require, for example, 300,000 signatures here in California for an independent candidate to get on the ballot, because you got to get double the number because they disqualify so many signatures. When you don't have a competitive election, you're not a democracy, period. That's what it's all about. It's a duopoly, and they're strumming the tune of Wall Street and the military-industrial complex. So this book is designed to break it up, and it's a very short book. I've learned to pay attention to short attention spans of our present culture. And what is involved, let me just flip it. If I was a betting person and I could get a surety, I could say, tap one of those mega billionaires in Silicon Valley who has a conscience or enlightened, and for $1 billion, we can turn the country around. So this is just a challenge. How would you turn the country around if somebody gave you $1 billion in 36 months to do it? And when you ask students that, you know, the best, quote, universities and working in political science and anthropology and so on, they don't have a clue how to answer it. I've had answers like, well, you increase voter registration. I've had answers like, you start a third party. They don't have a clue because they never ask the question, as Matt said, what if? If you don't ask the question, what if, you can't envision real possibilities. And we don't have a practical utopian culture where we ask the question, what if? What if we had 1,000 organizers full-time on the ground, two in every congressional district, and 10 or 15 on Capitol Hill in Washington to push full Medicare for all? What would happen? We'd get it. Because you have left-right support for that. It's cheaper, it's better, it's less anxious. You just need a card like Canada, and you're set. And you have a free choice of doctor and hospital, which you don't have with these all these networks and all the complexities, mind-blowing exemptions, deductibles, complex deductibles, and all the nonsense that fritter away people's time and increase the anxiety level of millions of people. And then they don't end up getting health insurance covered when they need it. And you know how many people are working on that now, full time? My best guess, zero. They've agreed to settle it. You got a gridlock Congress, forget about it. You got Obamacare, now is not the time. Zero. We would audit the Pentagon with $1 billion. You easily could get the Pentagon audited because it's violating federal law since 1992. The only department agency that doesn't provide an audit to the GAO accounting arm of Congress. It's only $650 billion, not counting all the dark budgets, a year. Therefore, they couldn't account for $9 billion lost in Iraq in the first year of the criminal invasion. The Air Force buys billions of dollars of supplies because they don't have audited warehouses that have those same supplies, and on and on. So how would you spend $1 billion? Here's what I would do. I would organize about 2,000 people in every congressional district. Because when you say, well, how do you want to change the country? Well, some of it we can do ourselves. You know, we can put solar panels up, and we can eat nutritious organic food, and we can do this and that. And that's important. You practice what you preach, and you build awareness. But for better and for worse, Congress is the Khyber Pass. Congress is the most powerful branch of government, and it happens to be the most personal branch of government, and it happens to have a name on 535 people, and they put their shoes on like you and I do every night, and they want to get reelected, and it's nice to replace a lot of them, but if you had $1 billion, you wouldn't have to replace many of them. You just have to put the kind of pressure that on occasion we did in the 60s and early 70s and change corporate members of the Congress into consumer and environmental champions, led by Nixon, who signed into law EPA, OSHA, Product Safety Commission, wanted to give the vote to the District of Columbia, had a better health plan than Clinton did years later, and had a minimum incomes plan to combat poverty. He was way ahead of Congress because he feared the people. He feared the rumble of the people from the 60s. He was the last Republican to fear liberals. It was all downhill after that. So you would basically hire 1,000, couple thousand seasoned organizers, put them in every congressional district, and depending on who represents the district, it could be the 20% really progressive members of Congress, you wouldn't have to unload on them as much, but you would organize 2,000 people in each district. Every district has community colleges, neighborhood leaders, lawyers, teachers, technicians, good blue-collar workers who don't take mush for an answer, etc. And you would say, we want you to commit 200 to 500 hours a year around a transformational agenda of, say, a dozen directions, which I'll point out, and we want you to raise or contribute $200 to $300 a year to open up full-time offices of 3-4 people in every congressional district, so all this volunteer time connected with all the other Congress watchdog groups around the country can have full-time advocacy. All right, so that costs about $100 million to do that a year before it gets self-sustaining. So you got money left over. You got $1 billion. What do you do with the rest? You open up an in personam lobbying effort right on Capitol Hill. The most successful lobbyists do not have marches and demonstrations. I am all for marches and demonstrations. You get new people in, you get some reasonable press, and you arouse people's sense of possibility. But what happens when these marches and demonstrations are overwhelmingly on weekends and the energy goes into the ether? It's not focused laser-like on what? 100 senators and 435 members of the House. Now, the most successful lobbyists, have you ever seen a mass demonstration in Washington and San Francisco by the military-industrial complex demanding more nuclear subs and F-35s? They don't operate that way. They know everything about those 535 that's possible to know. Their votes, who owns them, who they play golf with, who's a doctor, accountant, lawyer, clergyman, staff, they pump money in, and they have all kinds of dossiers. And they basically say, if you don't want a primary challenger, it's sub rosa for those who resist a bit. And they get a majority. 1,500 corporations get a majority of the members of Congress, and they don't have a single vote. What are we doing out here? Reading muckraking books? Terrific documentaries? Golden Age. Can't imagine how much of this country is exposed down to the iota by reporters, editors, organizers. And where's it going? Do you ever read the last page of these books? Gerrymander, where are you?
There.
Yeah, Jerry. Jerry, you know, and I like the book that came out called Not So Fast. It's a critique of technology and bad analysis of repercussions. The companies accentuate biotech, nanotech, artificial intelligence, and other, medicines. They don't talk about the risks and all the other unintended so-called consequences. And I read the book. It's a really good book. It shows all the conflicts over 50, 60 years, worrying about the bomb, what happens when you get the bomb, and it gets proliferated, worrying about all these other technologies. And the last page completely tailed off, left the reader with nothing. And that's done again and again and again. So where are we with massive disclosure? We're overwhelmed and overloaded with information. How about connecting knowledge to action? The old Ming Dynasty philosopher said in the 14th century, I don't know, the wisdom of the ancients, how do they get this wisdom? No email, no fax machine, no telephone, no Facebook account? I mean, what's going on here? Listen to this wisdom. Quote, it's 14th century. To know and not to do is not to know. End quote. Marcus Cicero, over 2,000 years ago, Roman lawyer, freedom is participation in power. We define freedom as, you know, get off my back, don't invade my privacy, don't assault, don't surveil. I mean, that's freedom from. It's freedom to that we've got to demand. We don't have civic freedom in this country. We have personal freedom. We can buy the books, music, choose our friends, our clothes, what we want to eat. That's personal freedom. That's not civic freedom. Dictatorships allow personal freedom. And so, okay, so you have an in personam crew. All they do is go up on Capitol Hill. That's all they do every day. The corridors weave their way between the corporate lobbyists, get to know the staff, the reporters covering from back home, the senators, the representatives, the connections with the executive branch, etc. The kind of thing 360.org is trying to do back home. Do you know there isn't, to my knowledge, one person going up on Capitol Hill as we speak, lobbying on climate change? That surprise you, all the environmental groups? You know why? It's called gridlock. They've given up for the time being. So they lobby EPA, try to help the coal pollution reg. They lobby the usual executive branch stuff. But Congress is like stasis. It's paralyzed. Can't get anything through. Total nonsense. I wrote a letter about 3-4 years ago to Tom Steyer, George Soros, and Al Gore. And they're all, big on climate change. And, they got a lot of money. And I said, put in $20 million a year and get 130, 140 people, really seasoned, scientists, lawyers, public relations, organizers, whatever, to lobby Congress in personam on Capitol Hill every day and to work the press, connect back home. You know what the answer was? Indirectly, through their staff, that's not where the action is. Really? When I go up on Capitol Hill, I bump into coal lobbyists, gas lobbyists, oil lobbyists, nuclear lobbyists. Somehow they think that's where the action is. All right, so what do you do with the rest of the $1 billion? Well, that's what we got to figure out. But here's what we can get in a 36-month period. You got to span an election. And you don't have to replace that many. Starts out 25% or so on our side from the get-go. Here's what we'd get. We'd get enough audit and pressure on the Congress, on the Pentagon, to de-bloat the military budget. The military budget is so crassly wasted, it staggers even a Nietzschean imagination. You wouldn't believe what's going on in terms of theft by the military-industrial complex. The waste, the duplication, the redundant weaponry designed for a Soviet Union era of hostility. We would smash most of the corporate welfare. That's a left-right support. See, the reason why we can win is I'm going to read you about 20 transformations that are supported left-right back home. And that's an unbeatable combination. You walk into a senator's office with 50 people or 20 people, and you say, we're conservatives and we're liberals, they turn pale. Because they can game the liberals, if you're a right-winger or a liberal. They can game the conservatives. They cannot game a convergence. There's a book here by me called Unstoppable, the Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. So they don't like Wall Street over Main Street. The right-wingers want to break up the big banks. George Will writes columns saying, if banks are too big to fail, they're too big to exist. And Ron Paul and Barney Frank combined before they left the House to go after the military budget. There's a libertarian, liberal Democrat. You can see it. The reason why we don't see it in the headlines is because the divide and rule strategy of 2,000 years or more by the ruling powers is to focus on reproductive rights, gun control, you know, school prayer, those kinds of issues that, you know, if they're not superficially divisive, they are genuinely divisive, ideologically or religiously, what have you. We would have a living wage. That would be a slam dunk. You think the conservative workers in Walmart are going to fall on their axe and say, no, I don't want $15 an hour. I like $9.50 an hour. I'm a conservative. I want to conserve the money that the CEO of Walmart is paying himself, $12,000 an hour, not counting benefits. By noon, if he doesn't take a restroom break, by noon on January 2, he's earned more than one of any million Walmart workers in a year, not counting benefits. That's an easy one. Gather uncollected taxes. The IRS is being squeezed, so every dollar they lose, they can't collect $10 in taxes. What's the uncollected taxes? $400 billion. That's not counting tax havens and the shenanigans where GE doesn't pay any taxes because they've rigged the tax system. And they make billions of dollars and pay less taxes in dollars than one worker in GE. Billions of dollars of U.S. profits. We'd have a Wall Street speculation tax. How come we have to pay sales tax when we buy a book here, right? No. Right? How come if someone buys tomorrow $100 million of Exxon derivatives, they don't pay a penny? Sales tax. And the volatility is fantastic. You're talking trillions of dollars in terms of derivatives. Tiny percent of 1% can produce hundreds of billions of dollars. The transforming into solar energy and efficiency from fossils and nuclear. That could be a transformational policy in place, 3% a year, as David Freeman has pointed out, used to run four public utilities, including SCUD and the TVA. 3% a year, in 30 years or so, we're out of there. No fossil fuels. No nuclear power plants. Oh, allowing standing to sue. One way they get us is there's this ancient doctrine that if you don't have a vested economic interest, you can't sue the government because they wasted your money or they criminally invaded another country. And so that knocks the judicial branch completely out of the three-branch concept of our government. And they basically say, the judges say, well, you're just a citizen, you're a taxpayer, you have no standing to sue, you can't even get into the courtroom door. Knocks out a lot of challengers of the corporate state, which is what we have now. We have a merger of big business, big government, with the big government thirsting to resign or leave high government posts to work for big business. That's the Wall Street, Washington merry-go-round. Expand direct democracy, not just in California. There 25 states don't have the initiative, referendum and recall, and there are other forms of direct democracy. So if our representatives don't represent us, they represent corporatism, for example, we just bypass them. And that has to couple with two other changes. One is campaign finance reform, public financing of public elections, so they can't use the California initiative against you, like the tobacco companies and others have tried to do. I mean, we beat $80 million of insurance money in Prop 103 in 1988 with $2 million. because we had the LA Times and others on our side, and we've saved California consumers $100 billion, according to the leading actuary, J. Robert Hunter. But that's a rare thing. And the other one is, what are we doing giving away our public airwaves and monopoly cable license, getting nothing in return? I mean, to what level do we descend into the status of being saps? Right? We give the public airwaves 24/7 to commercial stations and quasi-commercial toadies like NPR and PBS. And they use it 24 hours a day. They use it 24 hours a day to decide who says what, who doesn't, who gets on and who doesn't. Most of it is entertainment and advertising. They take off the table huge voices of the people of concern about the depraved situation in our country, the deteriorating situation, self-censoring themselves to unimaginable profits, and they do it free. We charge them no rent. We're landlords. The FCC is our real estate agent, and they made sure Congress says, you get it free. You turn that around. You say to Congress, no, no. No, no, little boys and girls. From now on, you're obeying us, the sovereign people, and we'll show you how we're going to enforce that with summons, formal summons for town meetings regularly. You report back to us. We control the town meetings. We're going to have the agenda. You're just going to listen and study and go back and do what you're told, because we have a left-right coalition, and we have the evidence and the humanity behind it. And so we should have our own audience network.
That was Ralph Nader speaking 3 weeks before the 2016 election about his new book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than We Think, offering encouragement and inspiration at a time when so many felt uneasy and powerless about the available presidential choices. Nader spoke for an hour, and you will need to come back for the next broadcast of TUC Radio to hear the conclusion. He spoke in the loved and respected over 60-year-old City Lights bookstore in San Francisco. Nader's new book had just been published by City Lights in their Open Media series. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.